Welcome to the Growing EBITDA podcast, where we unlock the doors to management and technology insights in the middle market. Join us as we explore innovative strategies to drive revenue and EBITDA growth, interviewing industry leaders and technology experts. Whether you're looking to streamline operations, understand the latest tech trends, or lead your company towards exponential growth, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and let's grow together.
I was thinking about a deal that we collaborated on last year and spent a lot of time together working on. And I thought it'd be an interesting one for our listeners. We have the expert here, which is you. Do you want to just kind of give the background? I know we pre-chatted everyone before, but give the background on the deal and maybe we can just kind of jump into it.
Yeah, I think expert is a generous term. Mildly experienced, maybe, would be my phrase of choice, but appreciate the vote of confidence. So I'll give you the background. James, you and I started working on a transaction in collaboration with one of our private equity clients about 12 or 18 months ago now. You were leading the due diligence, the technology and operations due diligence on the deal. I was involved because we were co-investing in the business alongside our private equity partner. And one area that we spent a lot of time collaborating on, you and your team, myself, my team, and the lead investor, was value creation plan. And value creation plans in private equity are a critical tool that many, if not almost all, private equity firms use in rolling out their investment thesis and driving, you know, the positive growth in these investments and these businesses that they're seeking during their ownership cycle. So it really, you know, there's a number of tools in the quiver, so to speak. Value creation plans, or VCPs for short, are a key quiver in that, a key arrow or a key tool in that quiver. And I felt like maybe doing a deep dive into what they are for those that are less familiar with how they work, maybe specifically in the context of private equity, because there are some important nuances in this space. Felt like that might be something worthy of spending a few minutes on here today.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's an interesting lead in to helping folks understand, because there's a lot that sits under it. And I think for me, coming from the corporate side, I didn't really understand kind of the nuance. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a pretty straightforward name, right? Value creation plan. I think most of our listeners are going to hear that and say, yeah, have a plan to create value in the enterprise, right? Not too difficult, nothing too complex there. And if you have any familiarity with VCPs in the private equity world at all, you'll pretty quickly understand that, you know, this is really a strat plan, right? From the corporate side. Strategic plans, as we all know, may come in various different shapes and sizes. No real differences when it comes to value creation plans, except for the fact that in a private equity context, you're working with very hands-on board members, right? If you're the CEO of a private equity-backed business, you're going to have pretty high degrees of intimacy with your board members. It could be very different from maybe being the divisional president of a $500 million division of a large publicly traded company. You're obviously going to be working with folks at corporate, but it's a little bit different when you have a formal board that's comprised of equity owners with controlling rights in many situations as it relates to the business that you're running. And while there are some private equity firms that can be rather hands-off when it comes to some of this stuff, many of them can be surprisingly hands-on. And when we think about value creation plans, VCPs, it's very important to have alignment between those various different stakeholders, that, you know, very active set of board members, the CEO and the executive leadership team of the business, and perhaps even other folks across the organization. So not a tremendous amount of differences between strategic plans in the corporate world and value creation plans in the private equity world. But enough of a distinct set of differences that I think it's worth talking through those today. So I'm going to try to cover this fairly briefly. If folks have more questions or want us to do a deep dive in a certain area, they can certainly check in with us or shoot us a note, and we'll maybe queue up another episode in the future on this. But what we're going to cover today is really kind of defining what is a value creation plan, talk about why they're important in the private equity ecosystem or the private equity world, what some of the core components of VCPs are, and maybe some tips and tricks for successful execution. And we're going to try and tailor this to a fairly broad audience, you know, folks who maybe have a ton of strat planning or VCP experience, maybe other folks that have a little bit less. Maybe it's somebody's first time being involved in a formal strategic planning exercise, right? In the middle market, there's a lot of businesses who maybe have been entrepreneurially owned and haven't had a really structured strategic planning framework that they've used to grow the business in the past. So some of this might be a little bit more basic for some folks, but we'll try and cover some of the more advanced topics at the same time to broaden the appeal. All right.
Sounds great.
Cool. So let's start with definition. As I've mentioned, a value creation plan is really a strategic framework that's designed to identify, quantify, and implement initiatives that are going to enhance the value of a portfolio company, right? Portfolio company, simple term to represent a company that a private equity firm has invested in. It's in their investment portfolio. And they're very important tools, right? Because what a good VCP does is it's essentially, James, it's a roadmap for where we're going to go over the next number of years, right? And typically, a value creation plan is starting to take shape before the private equity firm even owns the business, right? During their diligence process, they're developing their investment thesis. Most strong, well-experienced private equity investors are going to have a very crystal clear plan in their minds of what they want to do with this business during their ownership cycle. Now, the reality is, though, is that private equity investors don't run the businesses that they're investing in. That's what management teams are there for, right? The CEO, the CFO, the COO, and their direct reports, they need to run the business. And obviously, they tend to know a lot more about the business and the market than these private equity firms that are kind of coming in as outsiders in many cases. And that's really where this kind of VCP plan starts to really take shape, right? So the PE firms kind of coming in with their ideas about where they want to take this thing. And very early on in the ownership cycle, typically in the first 90 days of the transaction closing, they're going to start collaborating very heavily with the management team to make sure that the management team's strategic plan, whatever that might look like, kind of merges with the private equity firm's thoughts, right? Because private equity firm may be coming in and they're doing their due diligence. They're finding out some things, learning about the business. They may have some interesting ideas or perspectives or relationships in the marketplace that may be able to supercharge growth for the business. They're probably not telling, they're not showing their entire hand to the management team as they're getting to know them during diligence. But after they've invested in the business, now we've got this cohesive relationship where everybody's in this thing together, right? If we all want to create the kind of economic outcomes that we want to see, we want to grow the business, we want to improve and grow EBITDA so that ultimately we can sell this thing to the next ownership group for a significant profit, we kind of got to all be drumming to the same beat and rowing at the same time in that boat together. And the VCP is just a really important tool to kind of align those stakeholders around, quite frankly, what do we need to do over the course of the next 3 to 5 years to materially grow the EBITDA of this business so we can create the kind of outcome that we want.
So quick question on that, Mike. Sorry. And this is an interesting insight for me that in this conversation, I don't think I really truly understood that the VCP flexibility. You just talked about kind of one's done before the transaction or the deal happens, and then it kind of gets aligned with the manager team and kind of harmonizes, if you will, that VCP. So playing that back a bit, is this kind of a living document? Because again, you mentioned that folks coming from other corporate strategy, right, is kind of you write it at the beginning of the year and then you execute for essentially 13 months and then you rewrite it and you execute. Is the VCP, can we think of it more as a living, breathing document that you're constantly iterating on?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. The answer is absolutely yes, right? If you've spent any time in the corporate world, you've seen most people roll their eyes when executives start talking about, we need to update our strategic plan, right? Yeah. And it's like, okay, geez, we're going to spend the next 6 months in a bunch of, you know, not terribly value-added meetings and these days Zoom calls. Mm-hmm. trying to create a fancy document. Maybe we've hired an expensive consultant to help us create a fancy document that we're going to put on a shelf and never look at again for 5 years until corporate says we got to dust that off again. You know, the reality is that well-run companies know that strat plans are living, breathing documents. They need to be updated and refreshed as market conditions change, as leadership changes, as the business develops maybe new products or customers approach them with new needs that they think that they can meet profitably. You know, they really need to evolve. And VCPs are no different than that. So yes, you know, the PE firms, as you mentioned, pre-transaction closing, they're developing their investment theses. Maybe they've developed a kind of a draft VCP, so to speak. They're harmonizing that immediately to the extent that they've got those relationships with the leadership team post-close, you know, or very swiftly post-close. And together, the board and the investors in this case and the senior leadership, the senior executives in the business are aligning on what are the needle movers, right? And I think that's another important thing that I want to talk about as we define what a VCP is and what it isn't. You know, there may be some tactical items that show up, like maybe during diligence, we identified that there are, the company has 10 servers in their server room and they're all no longer serviced, they're outdated, they're not supported. We need to go buy new servers. Let's just go upgrade new servers, right? That doesn't necessarily have to make its way to the strategic elements of the VCP, but it may be a very important post-closing item to work on, right? So you may have in the first round of VCP planning, you might have some tactical just go do it type items that get documented. But you know, the real intent is let's take a long-term 3 to 5 year view at where we want the business to go. What markets do we want to be in? What do we want our geographic footprint to look like? What leadership gaps do we want to fill? Where do we need to make upgrades from a technology perspective or from a human capital management perspective? Who do we want to go and acquire, right? M&A, you know, is often a big part of value creation plans with private equity firms. Most of our listeners are going to be well aware. Private equity likes to do a lot of add-ons, right? We like to do what we call roll-ups. Or the term I like to use, buy and builds, right? Go buy a business and build it through acquisition. Maybe they buy a $100 million business and go do 10 other add-ons or bolt-on investments, each at $20 million in revenue. Next thing you know, you're 3 years in, you got a $300 million revenue business that you're trying to integrate. So that you tend to see M&A show up as a key component of a VCP. So those are some of the easier ones to define. You know, other things that it might include, you know, really it should look at all of the key operational, financial, and strategic improvements that the business needs to make in order to support its long-term growth objectives, right? And at the end of the day, you know, the reason we call it a value creation plan is it really is a tool that should be focused on driving return on investment and aligning the interests of all the stakeholders involved to achieve the investment outcomes that we want to achieve. Typically, you're going to see VCPs have very specific and almost always very objective performance metrics and specific timelines, calling out who's accountable for doing or leading certain initiatives to make sure that the stakeholders can follow through and hold everybody accountable to achieving those goals. You know, so it really, to take it back from the top here, what is it? It's essentially a strategic planning document. It lists out what we need to do, when we need to do it, who's responsible for what, and what type of enterprise value it's going to create to the extent we're able to successfully execute these objectives. And to your point, this is something you want to review regularly. You know, the boards that I'm involved with, you're looking at this every board meeting and making sure, hey, has anything changed? You know, you're refreshing your memory about where we're trying to strategically take this business. And it becomes just a really important tool to keep everybody aligned during the number of years that you're going to be working together as executives and investors.
At the board level, to talk about that for a second, just to close that out, because I like that you mentioned it there. So I have my VCP, I'm adjusting my VCP. Thank you for that insight on, I'm continuing to work through that VCP. When it comes to the board, do you feel that most of the time I'm adjusting that VCP based on kind of market condition needs, or I'm reporting out on that VCP, eliciting feedback? Kind of how's that plan used with kind of that steering committee and to call it that a bit when you present that? How's that document used in that room compared to what you're doing with your management team and your day-to-day operations?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like I mentioned previously, private equity investors do not view themselves as business managers. They view managing the day-to-day aspects of the business as the responsibility of the CEO and the executive leadership team. So while I recognize that I said that the private equity group is going to come in with some type of straw man or perhaps very detailed version of a VCP when they're buying the business, right? So we're going to invest in the business day one. We kind of have a plan. As much as that is true, they're going to expect very quickly for the management team to take that input and incorporate it into management's plan. So from kind of day one, from the investor's perspective, the management team owns the plan, but the private equity groups want to speak into the plan, and they want to make sure that their voice is heard, and they want to make sure that their best ideas, at least that they think their best ideas, are percolating to the top and are at the forefront of management's mind, right? And in some cases, you're going to find that everybody's in lockstep. It's very clear who's going to do what. There isn't even that much back and forth dialogue about the value creation plan. In other instances, and we find this a lot in historically entrepreneurially owned businesses, you might have a business that does $200 or $300 million in revenue who has never gone through a strat planning exercise, who doesn't have any idea or any experience developing your and using tools like value creation plans. So in those instances, the private equity investors or maybe some consultants that they might engage who have expertise in, you know, strategic planning, there may be a lot more hands-on, and anything in between also could happen, right? You see a lot of businesses maybe that haven't had a ton of M&A experience directly, right? So maybe the private equity firm is going to be very collaborative in the development very early on of the M&A component of the plan. When it comes to kind of actually rolling this out and deploying it, kind of what that cadence looks like, the communication back and forth, which I think is the root of your question, once that plan gets developed, it's kind of the expectation of the private equity board members that the CEO is going to be giving you quarterly updates on that plan. You may reference it on maybe your monthly calls or your weekly calls with the investor group if you're the CEO. Whereas with your management team, the expectation is that a CEO would be meeting regularly with their management team to get updates on, have we achieved X, Y, or Z goals, or have we completed A, B, or C tasks? And you might be updating the board that, hey, we've accomplished these, or hey, we tried, but we failed, and here's why, and here's the corrective action that we're going to take to get back on track, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I think that side of how that roll up and reporting and continuing to look to that document, because in other episodes we've discussed, the real reason you're in the transaction is to create that value. Mm-hmm. And having that roadmap of how you do it, I'm great. Sounds like a great plan to align folks together. So are there any other core components that folks should think about that maybe we haven't discussed so far?
Yeah, as I'm thinking through this more, James, the most successful value creation plans that I've seen, they start with what are the long range revenue and EBITDA goals of the organization, right? Where are we driving this ship or this bus together? And from that, you then kind of back into how you're going to achieve those goals, right? And we've talked about that a little bit. You know, what are the strategic goals of the organization? It could include some of the tactical goals, but it's not just about how we're going to grow revenue and how we're going to grow earnings, right? And how you might get there is talk about adding customers, or like we've talked about growth through acquisitions. On the cost side, maybe the plan would include some cost reduction initiatives like deploying operational excellence to reduce transactional costs in the business or optimize labor productivity or whatever the case may be. But it should also include things like market expansion, right? Are we, you know, we're big believers too in thinking through strategic alternatives, or what we call them. You might not be in this market today, but what if you went and got in that market? You know, how much would that cost? How much upside might there be from a revenue or earnings perspective? How hard would it cost to grow into that market? Calling out and teasing out very specific operational improvements. The successful plans will typically include very discrete optimization projects that the leadership team intends to tackle. And maybe that's improving ARAP processes. Maybe it's reducing DSOs by improving invoicing efficiencies. Maybe it's, this is a big one from a technology perspective, upgrading our ERP system. We see a lot of plans include things around innovation. What's the next, latest, greatest product? Quite frankly, one of the plan items regarding innovation might be, building out an innovation process so that we, as an organization, become better at innovating new products on a more predictable and repeatable basis. And we want to make sure, too, as we're building out these plans, that it's not just, hey, we want to grow revenue by X, and we're going to do that by a new end product development process and these operating improvements, but also very specifically who in the organization is responsible for leading those. Because what we're going to ask is that those people go away and develop more tactical plans for how they're ultimately going to go and achieve those. And I think about, you know, the responsibilities of the CEO as it relates to a VCP, certainly leading the charge and making sure that the team is collaborating to produce stretch goals and to come up with what the strategies are to be able to achieve those goals, but also holding the team accountable to building out the more tactical kind of deployment plans for how those goals are ultimately going to be realized and how those strategies are ultimately going to be accomplished. Now, you wouldn't typically see a CEO presenting back to a private equity board of directors every single one of those tactical activities that needs to get done. Typically, they're distilling that up to the higher level elements of that VCP. And one of the mechanisms that they're going to use to communicate ongoing progress against the plan is through the review of some of the key metrics that were defined as part of the plan development that would allow them to kind of quickly understand and get ramped up to speed as to whether or not we're hitting those targets.
Mike, I would be remiss if we didn't tie this back to the name of the cast, which is growing EBITDA. So I think you've really established a nice baseline. You've taken us from what it is, how I create it, how I report on it, which I think is a good journey so folks can kind of baseline. Let's bring it back to kind of how's this EBITDA, hopefully accretive, but how's this EBITDA kind of, how's it tie into EBITDA? How do you see that mechanism? And that can be either you mentioned KPIs and kind of those ties, or maybe just kind of functionally business-wise, what does this mean for my EBITDA now that I have this plan and I'm executing for it? And how do I kind of think about it from an EBITDA perspective?
Well, I think I'm probably going to answer that question maybe in a little bit of a different way than you expect. EBITDA is the common measurement that private equity investors like to use to value their businesses or to value businesses. And private equity investors kind of eat, live, and breathe the EBITDA metric every single hour of every day of their careers. And the advice that I would give to folks who are dealing with private equity investors, maybe for the first time in their careers, or who are looking at getting into maybe a private equity backed business environment, you need to learn what EBITDA is. You need to be well versed in its definition and why it matters to these private equity groups so much. And you need to learn to talk. Your vernacular needs to change to focus on communicating impact to EBITDA. So I think most of our listeners are going to be able to say, you know what? I understand how this ties to EBITDA, right? I'm trying to grow the earnings of the business to improve the enterprise value. I think what sometimes gets lost, though, in value creation plan discussions is, as the CEO, as you're communicating this to your board of directors, putting it in their language and always making sure that you're focused on driving EBITDA. So, for example, presenting strategies that have a strong focus on how much enterprise value this initiative is going to create because of how much EBITDA it will generate relative to how much it's going to cost to execute or implement is kind of the way you want to start talking. What you don't want to do is say, hey, we want to go and enter this new market and we think we can grow sales by X. That's a fairly weak statement. What private equity investors want to hear when you're giving them an update on your VCP is, hey, we think that growing into this market is going to cost X, but it's going to have Y impact to the bottom line. And we think that we can achieve that in a 36-month window. Because even if you have a longer-term focused private equity group that is backed you, maybe they're trying to hold, you know, that investment for 10 years or 15 years, they want to know that the strategies that you're focused on, that they're being asked to support investment into, whether that's time or hard dollars into, are the needle movers. That we're not going to focus on what somebody's pet project is in the business. Like they really like that industry and that's why you want to expand into that industry. They want to know that it's going to move the needle. And they also want to be around conversations like, hey, should we go and build that capability or should we go and buy that capability? how much is it going to cost to do one versus the other? And how much net impact, how much EBITDA is that version of this strategy going to produce versus this other version of the strategy going to produce? So I think that as you enter this kind of private equity ecosystem, making sure that you're having these conversations and focusing on the impact of the bottom line and presenting quantifiable metrics that you're going to use to hold yourself and your team accountable to achieving those goals, and sharing with those private equity firms that you intend to present updates using data, which is going to allow them to make informed opinions and insights and offer assistance and guidance and support. That really is kind of the name of the game. And that's how I think this whole thing ties back to EBITDA.
So I think that's some interesting guidance and feedback there. And you know, I went back and looked. Obviously, a lot of this, we talked about that transaction earlier, family-run business, great business. We know that PE kind of targets those. You did great work on figuring out the co-investment. We had a lot of really rich conversations. We had a good dialogue with that management team. And so I went back and looked at my email in preparation for today's conversation and found a couple of the questions that were asked along the way that I think maybe would kind of help the folks kind of summarize all the insights we discussed today and just some quick hit question answer, if you're okay with that.
Shoot.
So one of the questions I found was, how do I know I've created the V in VCP? Is it qualitative, quantitative, or how do I know I've gotten it and achieved that value?
I think it could be both. You know, you might have qualitative value drivers. An example might be, you may know going in, or the business may decide, maybe for the first time in its history, we need a CFO, right? We need a institutional grade CFO to help us lead this business, report out our financials, deal with our financing partners, the banks, et cetera. And finding a great one might be your goal in X timeline. So how do you measure that? Box check, did you hire them or not? Pretty easy one. You know, the tough part is obviously getting a person that you like who sticks around and, you know, can create the value that you think they should be able to long term. I think on the quantitative side, just putting basic metrics in place, right? And reviewing those metrics, saying, hey, we want to improve this particular function in the business by reducing its cost from X to Y. Tracking that in a simple Excel spreadsheet is simple enough. Reporting that out on a periodic basis, obviously reporting out the important ones to the appropriate people. You're not going to share with your board every metric that you might share with your leadership team. So yeah, I think it's as simple as that.
And the temptation a lot of times is to build really great plans. You mentioned it earlier, corporations build these plans, sits on the shelf. I love the idea that I have some very kind of midterm goals or information I'm working towards, and then just kind of ticking through it. I think that kind of shows that inertia of improvement and drives a lot of great change. Okay, so we discussed kind of the board, we discussed the CEO, we discussed the management team, which I think all of our listeners can understand because we're making this a bit analogous to a strat plan, and strat plans are in that same vein. One of the things I think is a failure a lot of times on a strat plan is we sit in a room, have a really great idea, but everyone struggles on how do I disseminate that. So let's talk a little bit. This question here was, how do I disseminate the VCP to the greater organization outside of myself and my direct reports?
I think, like with any sort of strategic planning exercises, there can be a tendency to involve the senior leaders of the organization. And that's a great place to start. It's obviously a lot better than the CEO having his vision, maybe writing that down, his or her vision, writing that down on paper and sharing it with the rest of the organization to some degree or another. The best plans, strat plans, VCPs, or whatever you want to call them, we believe are cross-functionally developed. So we talked about maybe the private equity firm has their ideas before they've invested in the business. The management team, obviously, they've been running the business for a while. They have their ideas about how they're going to grow and prosper. And I think one of the things that is a really powerful tool, if you haven't done it previously, is to get a broader audience engaged. So maybe dipping down beyond the direct reports to the CEO into some of the directors, maybe if that's the appropriate title in your organization, and engaging those stakeholders, right? Trying to solicit their feedback as you're designing the plan, posing the question to them of, hey, if we want to double in revenue in the next 36 months or 48 months, what do you think we need to do to get there? What do you think are some of the challenges that we're going to encounter? You'd be surprised what you might learn by talking with the head of IT who goes, oh, geez, I didn't realize you guys wanted to double the business. And I didn't realize you wanted to do M&A. By the way, our ERP infrastructure fundamentally will not accommodate that. And which might be an aha for, you know, maybe you're a more commercially focused CEO who just loves winning by selling more and spending a lot of time with customers. You might not have a lot of technology expertise. You might have overlooked something that could be of critical importance, right? So first and foremost, I think the dissemination starts with disseminating the aggregation of the best ideas into the plan formation. So it starts kind of very early on in the VCP development process, engaging every stakeholder that you think will add value to that process. That's the first step. The second step is not keeping them in the dark after you've solicited their great feedback, going back to the team and saying, hey, through the iteration of the plan development, here's what we heard. What do you think? Any additional input? And then keeping them apprised of progress to that plan over time. Now, how you actually practically do that and disseminate that information, we think about strat planning, we think about VCP deployment and execution governance should follow some type of fairly rigid framework and cadence. So it's probably something that the executive leadership team is looking at in detail every year on an annual basis to say, hey, are we still working on the right things? Has anything changed in our business that should cause us to relook at some of these key priorities? You know, so that happens on an annual basis. On a quarterly basis, that leadership group, the CEO should be discussing with the board of directors, here's how we're progressing to that plan, right? So the board continues to be involved. On a monthly basis, you would expect the CEO and their direct reports to be working on status updates to that plan, which could include a broad swath of cross-functional leaders and stakeholders in the organization. You know, and ultimately what we're trying to do is to drive accountability down into the org to, hey, we've defined what the strategies are, we've defined what some of the tactics are that we need to execute against to get here. How are we progressing to that plan? You know, so you may even see some of these conversations show up in some of the weekly functional, you know, calls. And there's different ways of rolling out multi-layered, especially get into bigger organizations, multi-layered VCPs or strat plans. We could probably do a whole episode just on that. But I think that's how you disseminate it. Regular, open, honest lines of communication, making sure that those stakeholders who helped contribute to the plan formation are being kept apprised of progress to date and anything that would have changed that would materially change that plan. You know, one thing that's important to note, in businesses that are doing M&A, your whole strategy may very well change the second that you close that first big acquisition. So completely relooking at that value creation plan after a large merger takes place, immediately after a large merger takes place, is also something that's important to think about.
I appreciate the comments on that bottoms-up approach. So we do a lot of work, PMI work, right? A lot of integration work. And I think that this runs kind of similar to that PMI. Within those work streams, you're really reaching into that middle management team to petition ideas. And I appreciate the comment you made of also reinforming of how those inputs. So I gave you three pieces of feedback. You made one decision. Here's the decision I made based on some of your inputs, some of the needs, and we kind of meet in the middle somewhere. So I think that's interesting that maybe the question is less disseminate and more petition, which I appreciate that view on. Last question. Super direct question. Kind of take that tactical. If you listen to the podcast today, this is something you walk away with and get started on tomorrow. Two tips for implementing a VCP post-acquisition.
The best CEOs that I've seen are holding a meeting with their new investors that the CEO is initiating, right? This is how I think it's done best. Within the first 90 days of a new owner investing in the business, whether they're a majority owner or minority owner, a new investor is coming into the business, scheduling a meeting with those investors that's outside of a board meeting to make sure that you've solicited and fully understand their investment thesis, to make sure that they have a really good grasp as to what you see as the biggest areas of opportunity to drive EBITDA growth and ultimately drive enterprise value in the business, and having a cross-functional dialogue about that. Get in a war room together, lock the doors, order some takeout, and spend 4, 6, 8 hours talking about all the opportunities that the business has and why you think X, Y, and Z are the most important to focus on, getting their feedback, and maybe they're thinking that X and Y are extremely important, but Z might not be. Ask them why. Why do they think that? and then spend the first 6 months building a very comprehensive value creation plan that takes into consideration their feedback from that initial meeting, plus the feedback that you've solicited from your broader leadership team and maybe other important stakeholders in the business, and coming back to that board by maybe the second or third board meeting and saying, listen, here is my plan. Now, in a much more mature business, maybe 300, 500 million, 700 million, and maybe $1 billion in revenue mid-market business, you may have well-entrenched strategic planning processes and frameworks and tools and plans that exist. You know, so some of this advice that I'm giving is probably more applicable to some slightly smaller businesses who maybe haven't gone through this exercise in the past. But if I'm a new CEO, or I'm a CEO that's now finding myself that I'm, you know, owned and have investors that are private equity in nature, that's how I would do it. I'd have a meeting within the first 90 days between us boys. I'd probably try and make sure that that happened in the first 30 days, just to show that I'm taking initiative here on what is, I guarantee you, an extremely important thing to focus on as a CEO. I try and have that meeting with those stakeholders very early on and outside of a board meeting. You can talk about these during a board meeting, but let's have a structured, collaborative strategy session to make sure we're teasing out some really great ideas that everybody has, getting them down on paper, writing them down always helps, asking what which ones they think would be their number one, number two priority, talking about why I think as the new CEO, these would be my priority focus areas, and then saying, hey, you know what? I couldn't possibly have a plan developed in 15 days or 30 days. Give me a couple months. I want to go engage the rest of the stakeholders, make sure there isn't anything I don't know about the business that they know about the business that could either hurt or help this plan or accelerate this plan. And let me come back to you guys with a really thoughtful first draft of this. And I would call it a first draft and say, I want your input to the first draft, right? And iterate with them a few times in the first 6 to 9 months, certainly within the first year of ownership, because bear in mind, if you're going to work fast, which is the beauty of the private equity model, we want to work fast. We want to grow businesses quickly. We want to create really great economic outcomes in maybe a 3, 4, 5, 7 year time period. You got to make sure you got a good plan in place in year one, so you have years 2 through 5 or 2 through 7 to go and execute that plan. And then what I would do, and this is answering your question a second time, what I would do next then is I would make sure every time I have a board meeting, I'm giving them an update on that VCP. And you don't have to ask them to, you don't have to read it to them again the whole time, right? You can issue it as a pre-read before that board meeting, ask them to maybe take a look at a few particular pages that maybe the team has refreshed or updated, and continue to make sure that they're apprised of what's happening and how you're executing to that plan, and be prepared to ask them for additional resources if you need to go and do that. I think what a lot of CEOs don't realize about the private equity model is private equity firms actually want to bring a lot of resources. They want to invest a lot of money into these businesses to the extent that it supports profitable growth. So don't be afraid to ask for some big ticket items. If you think you can accelerate the achievement of the plan, but you need $3 million more on some consultants to come in and do X or Y or Z, or you want to set up a new facility and it's going to cost $20 million worth of new equipment, you'd be surprised how quickly people are going to say yes if there's a really sound business plan that supports the broader VCP that you've all agreed from day one is the right plan for the business. You'd probably be surprised how much support you're going to get. But keeping them apprised, you know, all along the way and regular updates is certainly a helpful way to get there.
I like that. And that third. So to play it back, number one, have that meeting the first 30 to 90 days.
Yep.
Number two, present V1 within, or version one of that plan within the first 6 months. And you added a third, which I like, make sure to report it out and update folks.
Yeah, just keep people apprised of what's going on. And, you know, we've just spent the last few minutes talking about how a CEO is engaging up into the board, but some same version of the same thing back down across the organization. You got to keep those folks apprised. And there's well-documented ways of how do you roll out strategic plans throughout businesses. There's tools like goal deployment, strategy deployment, those types of tools, OGSM, OKRs, you know, there's, you know, 400 different versions that different smart folks have come up with over the years. It doesn't really matter which version you use, as long as you use one of them and you use it well. You're consistent about it. You're chatting with those teams regularly. You're holding people accountable to cross off those tactical objectives that support the broader, you know, strategy of the business.
Yeah, great. Funny, you know, as we close out today, when I had joined an organization, so I was working, living in Mexico, I came back to the U.S. to work for a U.S. organization, and we had a strat meeting. And in that strat meeting, they asked me what my BHAGs were. Have you heard the phrase BHAG before?
Not, I am unfamiliar with BHAG. I don't think I want a BHAG. Yeah.
Big, hairy, audacious goals.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
And so that was one of those moments that I realized this strategy meeting is going to be a thing. And so I appreciate you today breaking down this conversation not at the BHAG level, but at the detail level where folks can understand what's something that's tactical. I think there's a lot here. I took a couple notes during this, and maybe we'll do a couple follow-ups where we deep dive on some of these things around the KPIs, the communication. I really like that. And I know that we have some templates that we use with our clients, and maybe we could talk about what goes into those. Any closing thoughts before we leave today?
Ready for lunch.
Great. Well, let's get at it. Thanks everyone for listening, and good luck on your value creation plans.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Growing EBITDA. If you like this episode, hit subscribe or follow us on LinkedIn for updates. Got a topic you'd like us to cover? Drop us a message. We'd love to hear from you.